Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Is it Sunday yet? Waiting, still waiting, waiting for another 72 hours or so, and then maybe we'll get to Sunday once and for all. Good afternoon, everyone. We welcome you into the Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and yep, it is Patriot time against the Denver Broncos, Sunday afternoon at 4:25 Eastern, just a little more than 72 hours from now, and we're counting it down. Seems like we've been counting it down all week. This is one of those weeks where, especially in advance of the bye week, which the Patriots have next week, but this is one of those weeks where you just, honestly, you may have the best thing going on this week. This may be the best week of work that you've had in a long time, and you still can't wait for the weekend to get here.
Can't wait.
Can't wait, Bart. Can't wait. Now, we all feel like the matchup is going to go right down to the end. We all feel like this matchup is probably going to have its fair share of great excitement about it. Clearly, you'll have two of the best who have ever played the position of quarterback going at each other. It's Peyton v. Tom, or Manning v. Brady, XVI. For those of you that are uninitiated, that would be Roman numeral 16. Yes, we all know that Tom leads the series 10 wins to 5. Peyton has a slight lead in the playoffs, and Tom could take a huge step toward correcting that with a win on Sunday, because that would give the Patriots at least, all things being equal, a leg up in terms of potential playoff push in another month or two or thereabouts. All right, so here we go. Sunday's weather, as it now stands, doesn't look like we're going to get the predictions of snow. There's only about a 10% chance of precip for Sunday. But it is going to be cold. It is going to be rather windy. Forecasts are calling for a high in the low 40s and a low around 30 degrees. Kickoff, of course, will be at 4:25 Eastern time. And with daylight savings coming in at 2 a.m. on Saturday night, we're going to get the hour of sleep back on Sunday, which is great. That also means it'll be dark a lot earlier. So by the time the game kicks off, we'll be in the twilight hour at 4:25, which means the weather will get colder faster. So that's fine. But in case you were wondering how these two guys fare in, shall we say, chilly weather, since this will be the first, I guess, technically chilly game of the 2014 season, Manning is 8-11. 8 wins, 11 losses. With almost as many picks as touchdown passes, when the temperature at kickoff is under 40 degrees. This is from ESPN Stats and Info. Now, I don't know if it'll be under 40, but it's expected to be somewhere in that vicinity. The feel-like temperature, the wind chill, could certainly be in that range. Brady, on the other hand, here you go, 42-6. 42-6! When the temperature at kickoff is less than 40 degrees and his touchdown to interception ratio is 3-1. Now, clearly, there's a big discrepancy there because Peyton Manning played the majority of his career in the Indianapolis Colts Dome Stadium. Nevertheless, don't discount the fact that if it's blustery, Brady is certainly going to feel more confident. Well, I don't want to say more confident. I hate to say that Peyton Manning isn't going to be confident in anything he does, because he will be, and he is, and he probably should be. He's got the track record to back it up. But just for those of you that, you know, are looking for a little bit of that verification there, just thought this was an interesting comparison of all the stats and all the numbers that you've seen, you know, probably posted this week in Manning v. Brady XVI, that 42-6 at kickoff under 40 degrees is significant to to just an 8-11 record for Peyton Manning. And that's also taken into consideration that Manning played most of his games on the road, clearly, because of his dome-to-home stadium for all those years in Indy, while Brady, of course, was at home here at Gillette most of the time. So I thought I'd just pass along that little tidbit if you hadn't seen that or hadn't heard that. We've got a bit of a change in format today here for Hashtag Prediction Thursday. Not that I don't want you to send me your score predictions, because I do. So get those fired up and ready to go. 855-PATS-500. Toll free, 855-PATS-500, the telephone number. Web radio at patriots.com. Email address at JRBroadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook, R-O-O-K-E. Submit the friend request if you haven't done it. And then you can post and we can chat during the program as well, which I do with several people throughout the course of our playbook programs. A little bit of a different twist today, because we're going to move Russell Baxter, pro football guru, coming up in about 5 minutes. He's going to join us in the first hour of the program today because we'd like to be able to talk a little more Broncos today. And because of the time difference between here and Mountain Time in Denver, our good friend Mark Johnson, who's the sports director at KOA Radio in Denver. I've known Mark since his days back in the Big East more than a decade ago. He's going to join us, but he's got to be on the air. So quite frankly, we wanted to get him on before we were done and when he was available. So we're just flip-flopping Russell and Mark, and Mark is going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour to talk a little Broncos football with him. So just a little bit of a slight change, but we are going to hit Russell, and he will come up in just a couple of minutes, and then we'll hit Mark Johnson of KOA Radio in Denver in the 3 o'clock hour this afternoon. I wanted to, before we go any further today, and I don't know how many of you are aware of this. If you're outside of New England, outside of Boston, you may or may not be aware of this today. But I feel like I needed to at least say something, because he was a huge fan of the Patriots, a huge supporter of all of the Boston sports teams, but particularly of the Patriots. And we loved him for his verbal foibles whenever he was talking about Wes Weckler and Adam. What was the way he used to call Vinatieri? Do you remember?
Called him Adam Veritek.
Yeah, Adam. Yeah, he called him Adam Veritek, right? Confused him with Jason Veritek of the Red Sox. But Boston's longest-serving mayor, Tom Menino, passed away earlier today at age 71, died of cancer just after 9 o'clock Eastern time this morning. He had retired from office earlier this year after saying he really didn't have the stamina any longer to be mayor his way, which was obviously very public. He very much was a mayor of the streets, elected mayor of Boston 5 consecutive times. He was elected a city councilor 5 times before that. This guy, you know, we love to make fun of him. People called him Mumbles because of his verbal missteps. But make no mistake about it, this guy loved Boston. He loved this area. He loved the sports teams in this area, as I'm sure many of you do. And for those of you who are former Boston residents, I'm sure that you can appreciate what he has done and what he had done during his tenure in terms of keeping Boston in the forefront. He was a lifelong resident of Hyde Park, took over the reins of city government as acting mayor back in 93. So that's, what, 21 years ago, when then-Mayor Ray Flynn, who's a Providence College grad, by the way, when Ray Flynn was appointed ambassador to the Vatican. So that's how Tom Menino became mayor in Boston, and then he served for, you know, basically 20 years before stepping down earlier this year. And I wanted to pass along my own personal condolences to residents of Boston, to Mayor Menino and his family, and to anyone really who's been a sports fan and followed New England sports teams for any length of time, because this guy represented all of us well. Decades of public service. You know, here's a guy that, you know, that oversaw the completion of the Central Artery Big Dig project. It had a lot of problems, but he saw it through to its completion. If you know anything about the city of Boston and all the tunneling that was done, the Democratic National Convention came to the city. You know, he just a lot of different. There's a whole laundry list of things that this guy did. But he's most memorable, I know, for a lot of his verbal foibles when talking about the Patriots in particular. And we had a lot of fun at his expense. And the best thing I can say is that I really like talking about politicos who don't mind being made fun of. And he never did. And I can appreciate a person, man or woman, who can make fun of themselves. And that's one thing that he did very, very, very well. You don't have to agree with, you don't have to like the man's politics, but he's a good friend of the sports teams in this area, good friend of the New England Patriots. So rest in peace, Tom Menino, passed away earlier today at age 71. All right, now let's move on. Back to football, and we bring in the one and only.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Mr. Baxter, good afternoon, sir, and thank you for the schedule switcheroo today. It's greatly appreciated.
Oh, no problem. By the way, Tribe 54, is that Teddy Bruschi's tribe?
Very good. You picked up on that. That was
that just occurred to me.
Yeah, how about that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Club 54, Tribe 54, Pack, Troop, whatever you want to call it.
Wow, Club 54, Studio 54.
Studio, there you see. Now we're dating ourselves a little bit. Studio 54, absolutely. How
I
are
think it? Everybody dated each other at Studio 54, didn't they?
Now, wait a second, big fella. I'm taken, so. Oh, good stuff. How are you today?
I'm great. And by the way, you say 54. Boy, we saw a pair of 51s last week, huh?
Yeah, how about that? A couple of half a hundreds hung last week, one of them by these Patriots. I can't say that I'm surprised that teams score with that kind of prevalency, but at the same time, you know, the adage of defense wins championships seems to really go out the window during the regular season, comes more into play once you get it down to the playoff teams, does it not?
Well, I think what we're seeing, and, you know, I feel like I say this every week, but we're now seeing the teams, you know, New England, and I think Bill Belichick said it much better than anybody else could say it. You know, the first 4 weeks of the season, because, and I think it's because of the way, I'd love to hear coaches' thoughts on the preseason. You know, it's a feeling out process,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you're lucky enough to avoid a 1-3 or an 0-4 start, you know, you don't have to spend half the season getting back to 500.
Right.
You know, now you're seeing that, and now you're seeing, I mean, look at the quality quarterbacks just this past weekend. Breeze, Manning, Brady, Roethlisberger. I mean, at one time or another, all of them looked pretty flawless. You know, Aaron Rodgers was looking good. I think the hamstring injury hurt him a little bit. But, you know, now teams are starting to get in the groove, and now you're also starting to see teams starting to open up their playbooks a little, teams starting to get other guys incorporated in the offense. You know, it's funny, you know, up until recently, in Denver, for instance, you know, I want to say the first five games of the year, Peyton Manning only threw touchdown passes to three different guys.
Okay.
Okay, Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, and Jacob Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
That's been in recent weeks that Wes Welker and Emmanuel Sanders have gotten into the mix.
Right. Right.
Okay, you've seen in Pittsburgh the rookie Martavis Bryant, three touchdowns the last 2 weeks. Okay, you're seeing more and more Tim Wright with the New England Patriots. People are getting more involved. You know, people are getting more into a groove. It's just weird how we get ready for the season now, John.
Yeah, it's weirder and weirder and weirder.
Well, you're limited in what you can do contact wise. You're limited in terms of reps because of the. Let's play two quarters, let's play a half, let's play three quarters, let's not play at all, you know? I mean, it's like sending a rocket ship to the moon and cutting out the engine just before you hit the atmosphere.
Sure.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. It never has. And I think that's why we see the choppy football in September. And now things aren't so choppy. And boy, what a card this week. And for my own selfish reasons, because I'm now doing a top 10 every week, which I call besties. I'm trying to stay with the kids, you know what I mean?
Nice.
But my top four teams all play each other this week.
How about that?
Denver and number four, New England, number two, Dallas, and number three, Arizona.
I like that. And we're going to jump into that very, very soon here. But I let me first of all concur with your assessment that, you know, the new practice regime that, you know, teams are going through since the new bargaining agreement came into play, I think very much is a factor in not only the way teams are playing, but in the injury factor as well. Because strange as it may sound, I think teams have to be in game shape to get themselves game conditioned to avoid some of the injuries that we see occurring nowadays. And I know that's weird because you've got bigger, stronger, faster now compared to what was 10 or even 20 years ago. Nevertheless, I think that's been a huge factor over the course of the last couple of years in seeing a lot of significant injuries occur in the first half of a season.
Yeah, I mean, bigger, faster, stronger doesn't necessarily mean better, as you know. And I know we're more protective of players in terms of concussions and injuries and so on. But it's still a game that demands contact, and if you're going to get ready for it, you got to have some contact.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's start it off with tonight's game. The Thursday night game doesn't sound like a real big shindig in Carolina. Saints are 3-4, have not won an away game all year long. Panthers at home, 3-4-1. They're 2-2 at home. But this is a battle for first place in the NFC South, strange as it may be.
Welcome to the NFC West of 2014.
Yeah, I was just about to make that analogy, and I'm glad you did too.
And I'll tell you something, John. The thing is, listen, I know divisions take on personalities or their own, but how about a little Dr. Jekyll instead of Mr. Hyde? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, when it comes to defense, and it's the entire division. Now, these are just numbers, so you do with them what you want, okay?
Sure.
The Panthers have given up 208 points already this year in 8 games.
That's a lot.
They gave up 241 all of last year.
Well, they could match that at the halfway point this year if the Saints have a good night tonight.
Okay, so now you think about 208. By the way, that's 26 a game.
Yep.
Okay? Atlanta's given up 221 in 8 games. Mm. Okay? That's about 28 a game.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa's given up 223, and they've only played 7 games. And the Saints are like the steel curtain. They've only given up 188 in 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
The whole division, listen, Atlanta was terrible defensively last year. Tampa Bay was terrible. But Carolina and New Orleans were 2-4 in yards allowed and 2-4 in scoring, I believe, last year in terms of scoring defense. And, you know, I think it's going to be a wild game tonight. But not because of offensive execution. It's because of two defenses that need to be executed.
Okay. Probably the fans on both sides of those two teams probably feel the same way, just hoping they can outscore the other.
You can do anything with numbers you want. And I'll tell you what's really amazing. I believe Carolina's defensive unit last year gave up 21 touchdowns. Okay? That's not a bad total, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think this year they've given up 24 already.
Already, wow.
Okay? I mean, and this is a team that only gave up 21 points the first 2 weeks. I mean, they're 1-4-1 in their last 5 games. The Saints, as you mentioned, can't win. Although I like the Saints tonight because there's probably one consistent. Carolina's got offensive issues really on the line. Their running back situation is muddled. Their best running back is Cam Newton. How can you not like Kelvin Benjamin, by the way?
Right.
Okay? How can you not like Greg Olsen? But I find it hard to believe that not having Greg Hardy makes this big of a difference for their defense. Meanwhile, I think the Saints, and it's funny because they haven't won a road game all year. I think they've lost 7 in a row regular season games. Everybody kind of leaves out the fact they beat Philadelphia in Philadelphia in the playoffs last year. I think that counted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they beat Carolina tonight. But lots of points. I think it'll be a fun game to watch. And listen, the last 3 Thursday night games have been pretty entertaining. I think we've gotten off the schneid.
Yep.
As far as the blowouts, maybe.
Hopefully. Of course, the game is just reverts to NFL Network alone starting tonight. CBS is packing up and done with the Thursday night thing for at least this year.
Yeah, what I will say, though, is we're still in the mode of divisional games, which has been kind of the idea behind this. And this is the first, last year was funny. These teams did not meet, I want to say, until week 14 on a Sunday night. and then met 2 weeks later. And the Saints beat them at home, and then Carolina returned the favor, and Carolina wound up winning the division. But, you know, just look at it. The Saints lost 5 games all of last year. They're 3-4. The Panthers lost 4 games all of last year. They've already lost 4. It's really an amazing collapse by the entire division. And again, it seems like it's on one side of the ball more than anything else.
Sure. Yeah, it absolutely does seem like that. All right, you talked about it just a couple of moments ago, but we'll go ahead and bring this one into the equation. You got 4 6-win teams that are going at each other this weekend. Obviously, the Patriots and Broncos are 2 of those. Cardinals and Cowboys, the other 2. First time, and I'm sure you've seen this number this week, but I saw this one yesterday. First time since 1986 that we've had 4 teams with as many as 6 wins this early in the season play each other on the same weekend.
That's pretty. It's kind of cool, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
You can't make this stuff up.
No, it just tells you that's the way it.
I mean, 8 years.
Yeah, it's a long time. Long time since we've had that many teams face off each other, you know, this early in the season. Of course, here we are, the halfway point.
Right, and you know, let's face it. The 2 NFC teams, I don't think anybody ever dreamed would be 6-1 and 6.
No, neither one of those teams. Neither one of those teams you figured would be 6-1 or 6-2 realistically before the season started.
Listen, if you heard people talk about Dallas the way they talked about Dallas, you would have thought they'd be 2-6.
Yeah,
but give credit where credit. I don't think anybody's surprised that Arizona is doing well. I think people are probably surprised that Arizona is doing this well, and is 2 games up on the other 2 contenders in the division. I think that's the thing, but boy. You know, I was doing an interview somewhere else. Oh yeah, last night on Bleacher Report Radio, shameless plug.
Of course.
And you know, one of the hosts, he was mystified, but in a good way. He couldn't believe, but it's true, that the Arizona Cardinals are 13-3 in their last 16 games going back to last year.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this, I think a couple of weeks ago, how the Cardinals have this incredible streak that started to build right at the tail end of last year, the last half of last year, and now they've, you know, turned it into where they have to be considered, certainly amongst the top handful of teams in the league right now. With so many questions about Tony Romo and, you know, the whooping that he took at the hands of the Washington Redskins this past Monday night, does this give the Cardinals, in your estimation, an advantage, even though they're playing in Dallas?
It gives them an advantage if they employ the same game plan that Washington used. And I think Jim Haslett threw everybody for a loop. I mean, you know, Jim Haslett's always been known for being a pretty aggressive defensive coordinator. But let's be honest, we really haven't seen that from the Jim Haslett Redskins since he's been there. I mean, their defense has been more of a disappointment than the offense in some regards. So, I mean... You want to talk about laying in wait for 3 or 4 years. That's almost what it looked like they did. They got 5 sacks from every direction possible. I'm going to throw something out here, though. I'm not going to be stunned, okay? I'm not going to be stunned if Brand Wheaton starts this game.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that has to be the case. I mean, I know Romo wants to play. He said all week that he intends to play. But if you're the Dallas Cowboys, how can you possibly risk his health and what has turned out already to be a surprisingly strong start to the season, you know, by risking his health? I just don't know how you can do that.
Well, I mean, I'm one of those people that, listen, I know there's blood and guts, and I understand all that stuff. And I understand guys playing through pain. But if the pain or the injury affects your performance, now let's be honest, John. I know you watched the game Monday, and if you didn't, you watched the late highlight.
Sure, okay? I watched it. Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
When Tony Romo got back in that game, can you honestly tell me he looked comfortable?
No, he was not. That's just the problem. He wasn't. I can't believe that they let him back in there. I thought that was completely and totally foolish.
Now,
but I, you know,
that made it to me even more foolish.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You then get into overtime. You're down a field goal. I understand that. Okay? You run the ball on first down. Now, by the way, DeMarco Murray had a big night the other night. He also had the fewest carries he had in any game this year, only 19.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's not like he was worn out. You then decide on 2nd and 2 and then 3rd and 4th to throw the football with a guy who is not healthy I didn't understand that. There was no rush to score. You're in overtime. Why not do what you've been doing all year? It was really the first sign of panic that I saw in a Cowboys game this year, and it cost them.
Yep. Yeah, it did.
Okay, your quarterback doesn't look healthy. He's throwing flat-footed. He's, like, flinging the ball rather than throwing the ball. You know, that's why you get a backup quarterback. Let him play. I mean, that was my beef last year with Kirk Cousins, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That Robert Griffin III didn't play all preseason, and now we're just going to start him week one.
Yeah, right.
Why put a guy who's – I mean, I know Robert Griffin III is starting this week, and I'm hoping he's 100% healthy. You know, the way Colt McCoy played the other day, I maybe would play him one more week. Then Washington has the bye. You know, instead of being 100%, let him be 104%.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I understand it to a degree, but if you're going to talk about playing – at 95% and you're still a little hurt, I understand, again, the blood and guts routine, but I also don't understand is if you have people who are capable of doing the job, let them do the job because that's what they're getting paid for too.
Yeah, no question. No question. Well, apropos of nothing, but Arizona's lost 14 straight regular season road games at Dallas since last winning in 89, but they hadn't played at Dallas since 2005. They've played three times since then. They were all home games in Arizona, and they were all wins for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Once again, you know, kind of like the Saints stat I just threw out, that long losing streak for the Cardinals. And, of course, people will remember the Cardinals were division rivals with the Cowboys. By the way, did you say 89?
89.
89, which was the Cowboys' 1-15 season. That would have been the Phoenix Cardinals.
Correct.
Time until Buddy Ryan had them change it.
Very good.
Funny enough, we leave out the fact that the Arizona Cardinals went into Dallas in 1998 and beat the Cowboys in a wild card game.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's regular season. I understand that. But again, you know, it's not like they have. But, I mean, my goodness. Let's think about this. The last time the Cardinals won a regular season game in Dallas, how old was Carson Palmer?
Was he born yet? Yeah, he was.
9,990. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, just think about that. Listen, Bruce Arians, coach of the year a couple years ago, a candidate last year, certainly a candidate again this year. But I expect to bounce back from Dallas because I think they're going to be smarter this week. I just do. And if they're not, you know, all of a sudden we will be scratching our head about the Cowboys. I don't know about you, John. This to me is a very intriguing week in the NFC East because, you know, we've kind of anointed this division as a two-team race. And all the team, Washington's at Minnesota, okay? They're both 3-5, so, I mean, that's a coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
But the Eagles, the Giants, and the Cowboys all have really tough games this week.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
What would happen if Washington won and everybody else lost, which was the case last week, or, as in the case of the Giants didn't play?
Right.
Stranger things have happened.
Interesting. You mentioned the Giants. They've got the Monday night game at home against the Indianapolis Colts who kind of stubbed their toe. And great opportunity here for the Giants to kind of crawl back in it if the Cowboys and Eagles lose.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, you say Colts and Giants and you keep on waiting for both Manning brothers to run out.
No kidding. I was just thinking the same thing. In fact, I know that it's been kind of funny because the ESPN promos this week have almost alluded to that. And then, of course, they bring in some guy named Luck who's now running the show in Indy.
Boy, I'll tell you something. He is fun to watch. You know, I know the Colts fans couldn't have been happy with the way their defense played last week. They couldn't get the Ben Roethlisberger. 40 of 49, by the way, for Big Ben. You know, you throw for well over 500 yards in a game. I think it's about 50-50 you lose the game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
But to do what Big Ben did against them, and this was a Colts defense has been playing pretty well. They hadn't given up a touchdown in the first quarter.
That's right.
But they never really stopped the Steelers. The Steelers kind of stopped themselves and really kind of a disappointing, you know, and a game comeback. Don't get me wrong. By the way, maybe my favorite pass of the year in a losing effort, Andrew Luck throwing the ball about 40 yards down the middle of the field to T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
Not to the left side, not to the right side, straight on. like a bullet. I know you remember the throw. I believe it set up a touchdown.
Yeah, right.
A field goal late in the game. I mean, there's not a lot of guys who can do that.
Nope. And obviously, clearly, Patriots and Patriots fans will get a good chance to see that up close and personal in just a few weeks. So
yeah, on a Sunday night.
And T.Y. Hilton is very scary. That's a talented young man.
Well, I when he has the games that he's had the last couple of weeks, I now call him, you know, and this is no disrespect to the chain, but you play like that, you're more like a Waldorf Astoria than a let me tell you. So.
Oh, ba-dunch. I get it.
What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, understood completely.
But, I mean, he's been blistering, well over 100 yards receiving each of the last three games. I mean, he's going to be a handful for whoever gets the fun task of trying to cover him with the Giants. And I think the Colts will win on Monday night, but I think it'll be a struggle because, you know, defensively, we've been waiting for their lack of a pass rush or one guy really stand out to catch up with them. It did catch up with them last week. Now, against the Giants offensive line, it might not be as big of a problem. But, the Giants are still kind of limited. They're not going to have Rashad Jennings back again this week. It'll be Andre Williams. And listen, the Giants have a couple weeks to figure this out, and I think they'll move the football, and I think they'll score some points. But, you know, Andrew Luck does have it humming. I know they've lost three games this year. They've lost three games to three pretty quality opponents in the Broncos, the Eagles, and the Steelers.
Yes, they have. Buffalo is one of six teams that has the bye week this week, but in the division, a lot of teams in the bye week this week as we hit the midway point. Two teams still in action. The Jets are playing at the Chiefs, and the Chargers are playing at the Miami Dolphins. Now, the Charger-Dolphin game is significant because Miami, with a win, can jump over the Chargers as a potential playoff contender because that would put them at 5-3, and the Chargers would slip to 5-4 with the loss. So, clearly a little bit to play for here for Miami.
Yeah, and San Diego is reeling all of a sudden. And I don't know if it's because it's just the games in the division, which they've played three in a row. They struggled to beat the Raiders. They lost at home to the Chiefs. And then Peyton Manning did his Peyton Manning thing against them last week. And I know they're hurting a little, or I should say hurting a lot at running back. Brandon Oliver has certainly added a spark, but, I mean, they're down a lot of depth. I mean, no Danny Woodhead, no Donald Brown, no Ryan Matthews. Defensively, they haven't been as sharp the last few weeks, especially against the run. You saw Jamal Charles do his thing. You saw Ronnie Hillman do his thing last week. So this is a tall order. Now, this is another team that hasn't won. They've beaten the Dolphins in their ballpark, but I don't think they've won a game in Miami since the 81 playoffs, the famous overtime
game. Games? Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Some crazy streak like that. So, and listen, Miami's been sneaky good on defense this year. And Phillip Rivers has really cut back on the turnovers. He has fumbled five or six times this year, but I don't think he's lost the fumble. Mm-hmm. I think he might lose a couple fumbles this week. Olivier Vernon, Cameron Wake, Brent Grimes in the secondary. I think Miami might sneak up. I like the Dolphins this week.
Yeah, I kind of do too, and that certainly is going to make things a little bit interesting for the Patriots if, of course, they lose here at home to Denver, because Buffalo will stay at 5-3, and Miami would move up to 5-3, and the Patriots would only be a half a game ahead. So New England has to kind of look in its rearview mirror if they don't take care of business, and just a little bit of intrigue for the second half of the season. The other game that I wanted to touch on before we get to the Pats and Broncos is the Sunday night game. Baltimore playing at Pittsburgh, and after we already talked a little bit about Roethlisberger's performance last week, which was truly something to remember, Baltimore, you know, got off to such a great start this season overall, Russell, and I still kind of wonder and try to get the feeling that there's still a little bit of an enigma. We don't really quite know what to make of Baltimore, especially since Baltimore's had a good history against Pittsburgh, at least recently.
Yeah, they've done well, and they've also had their share of success in Pittsburgh itself.
Yep.
The last few years. They lost their last year, but they've done very well there. They've kind of owned the series the last, I would say, three and a half years. We know this game is usually close, although Baltimore blew them out on Thursday night, 26-6. And now what's intriguing for Baltimore is when they're done with this game, win or lose, they only have one more divisional game the rest of the year.
That's amazing.
They will be done with Cincinnati, who they got swept by.
Yeah.
They will be done with Pittsburgh, who they hope to sweep.
Right.
Would make up for the Cincinnati sweeping them. And then they've got, obviously, because everybody closes the year with divisional games, their last game of the year will be at home against the Browns. So they're not going to play anybody else in the division for the next seven games. So they need to make hay here. Now, they're already, like I said, they're 2-2 in the division because they beat Cleveland at Cleveland, and they beat Pittsburgh at home but got swept by Cincinnati. This is a pretty imperative game for them in terms of the division. But, you know, Pittsburgh's starting to get some of its young people involved. Martavius Bryant on the offense. They got Ryan Shazier back last week, who I thought made a little bit of a difference in terms of, you know, keeping some big gains from becoming bigger gains on some of the underneath passes and so on. Their pass rush is starting to come on. They're starting to force a few turnovers. I think they have 5 takeaways the last 2 games. They only had 6 in the first 6 games. It's at home. It's on a Sunday night. I think I'm leaning Steelers. And I agree with you. Baltimore is suddenly turning into the enigma. Joe Flacco hasn't been overly sharp the last couple of weeks. He hasn't been overly sharp since he riddled the Buccaneers for 5 touchdowns in about, 16 minutes and 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What were your thoughts last week, by the way, on the whole Flacco to Steve Smith touchdown that was called back for pass interference?
I think it was the right call. I think Steve Smith knew it was the right call. It's trying to get away one. I think there was a little probably bit of a flop on the play.
I thought there was a lot of a flop on the play.
Yeah, well, but you know, it's funny in this day and age where, you know, at times there are some games that are so ticky-tack, it was interesting to see actually an offensive player get called. And we do see our share of offensive players now get called because they're watching, the official is watching so closely both people.
Yeah, it is a point of emphasis, and we've talked about that a lot this year. Yep.
Yeah, but, I think I was more surprised that Baltimore allowed Cincinnati to come down the field as fast as they did after they had taken the lead. And, both games with Cincinnati, Cincinnati in the first game couldn't score a touchdown. Baltimore, they had a 15-0 lead. Baltimore took the lead, and then they got a big pass from Dalton to A.J. Green. And this game, it was Andy Dalton had a couple of really bad plays, and then Andy Dalton turned out to be the guy who plowed his way in his end zone with, I would say from an assistance from most of the city council of Cincinnati.
Right. Right. Yeah, city council of Cincinnati.
I think I saw the mayor and the treasurer in there somewhere.
Yeah,
too,
something like that, right. All right, well then, with all due respect to certainly everybody else in the league, and especially perhaps Arizona and Dallas this week, game of the week, be right here at 4:25 Eastern time on Sunday afternoon. We expect it to be colder and blustery, and, it's, as I've been calling it some this week, it's Manning v. Brady XVI. You understand that one, of course.
Absolutely, and it's the rivalry of our generation or this generation of football fans.
No question.
And, to see them do what they do. And somebody was asking me the other day, just where do you think, a rivalry like this? And because of free agency and fortunately because these guys started in the same division, people forget that the Colts were a member of the AFC East before realignment.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady's first start was against Peyton Manning and the Colts back in 2001. The fact that they played in the AFC title game in 2003 and the divisional playoffs in 2004, the AFC title game in 2006. So it's kind of built and built and built. And, of course, Peyton has gone on to Denver, and Tom is, holding the fort down in New England. And both those franchises continue to be successful. So we get to see this all the time. They played each other in the AFC championship game last year again, and the point I was bringing up is, you kind of got to go back. I'll do more recently that we got to see Dan Marino and Jim Kelly go against each other for years.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you what you thought your old school comparison might be here for our younger fans.
Yeah, I do that. Now, listen, you go back in the day,
yeah,
when the league was smaller and, more times than not, you didn't, a lot of times, as John, you didn't necessarily have two great teams in the same division, and sometimes not even in the same conference. I guess you could do Bradshaw and Stabler for a while. I guess you could do Aikman and Steve Young for a couple of years.
How about Staubach and Theismann?
Staubach and Theismann, yeah, for a little while.
For a little while, right?
A little while, you know, that was the thing. In fact, it might have been in a short while, if you think about it. I'm trying to think. Remember, Roger was done after 79.
Yeah, he was only there for, what, 13 years? 12 years? 13 years?
Yeah. I mean, he came in the league in 64, but In other words, Joe wasn't really the guy so much. You know, Joe was more early 80s, although he was the starting quarterback in the late 70s.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, when you think of Kelly, I think of Kelly Marino because, you know, obviously Jim started in the USFL and Dan started in the NFL in 83, but then in 86 they started playing each other at least twice a year. And then in 90 it was three times. And then in 92 it was three times. And then in 95 it was three times.
Yeah.
So they played each other in the playoffs a lot. 98, by that time, it was Flutie against Marino. So, but the thing is that it's got to be set up, you know, that you these guys get to play. Here's what people forget. Because I heard people say, well, how about Elway and Marino? It'd be disappointing for people to know that those guys, I believe they only met each other three times in their entire careers.
Is that right?
Yeah, 85. And then they didn't play each other until 98 in the regular season, and then 98 in the playoffs, and then Elway was done. It was one of the reasons brought up by the league that they came up with the schedule rotation that they did in 2002.
Because they had not faced each other in 13 years.
13 years, Dan Marino and John Elway.
I'll be. That's some good history right there. And now it really does make sense why the NFL came up with this rotation, because they didn't want that type of thing to keep happening, because that's not good for the sport.
The idea of the schedule now, not to give everybody a lesson, it's done on an 8-year rotation, so it ensures the fact that every team will play every other team home and away.
At least once in an 8-year span. Yes.
The 8-year span. That's why it's done the way it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's the idea of it, and one of the reasons they cite it was that. Another one was because I think Oakland hadn't played in Pittsburgh in 20 years or something, you know, different things. I'm just recalling the press release from 12 years ago, and all valid. I understood why they were doing what they were doing. But get back to this. You know, here you have Tom Brady with his 377 touchdown pass, and now tied with Drew Brees, by the way, for fourth all time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Manning with his 513. And I brought up Emmitt Smith and Jerry Rice, who happened to play two different positions. And obviously both ended with different teams than they started with. But both retired after, 2004 and went into the Hall of Fame together.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, and I think people, that it would be kind of cool down the road if Peyton Manning and Tom Brady both stepped down or retired the same season. I don't know if that's going to happen. And, of course, when I said that to the person, they said, yeah, they'll both retire when they're 50. And, they got 700 and 600 career touchdown passes or whatever it is. But, I mean, listen, they obviously have a lot of respect for each other. You know, Peyton has gone to Denver. And just think about this. For a guy who didn't play football in 2011, 13-3, 13-3, 6-1. What Brady does, by the way, I guess Tom Brady's okay. I guess he still plays football. I guess he's thrown 14 touchdown passes and no picks the last 4 weeks. Okay. For people who had, you know, were carving, you know, tombstones. I hope they have him this weekend because at least they can use him for Halloween.
Yeah.
It comes to Tom Brady's career, I'd say he was alive and well. So, but it's great to see them again. But to me, there's a glaring difference in this game. And I think it's the fact that the Denver Broncos have DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, and the New England Patriots don't have Chandler Jones. And, I'm looking like a Denver 30-23 in what I think will be a fun game. And I know Peyton has gone up there and struggled last year. They blew a 24-0 lead.
He did.
And lost in overtime. This is a different style Denver team. The finesse team of the Broncos from a year ago, I don't think we're not seeing that anymore. I think what they did against Seattle, even though they lost, turned out to be a turning point for them. And again, this is tough, but listen, Peyton's won in this building before. The Broncos, as a team, I just think are different and differently constructed. And this is going to be a game, I think, win in the trenches. And we're finally seeing the Denver offensive line, which they reshuffled this year, starting to come on a little bit. And I'm honestly, John, I'm still a little concerned about the Pats' run defense without Mayo and without Jones.
No question. It's one of the reasons why they made the Allen Branch move this week, and they got the kid Jonathan Casillas from Tampa for
and
a little backup hell.
They made the trade for.
Right. So, I mean, all of these moves, I think, are being added to help the problem, but the problem does still exist. And I would agree with you. I'm just, to me, and this is what we've been kind of battling with all week long, the big key here is for Denver to really attack the middle of the Patriots defensively, because that seems to be where the Achilles heel is. But I'm not so sure, with the exception of Julius Thomas, that this Denver team is equipped to go do that, because this Denver team is not a run-first, primarily run team. It's a pass-first team. Do they really want to step out of their element, so to speak, and allow a guy like Hillman maybe to see what he can get up the middle, or do they do what they feel they do best? And that could play right into the strength of New England, especially with the secondary that the Patriots have.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Demaryius Thomas versus either Darrell Revis or Brandon Browner is a wash. I think Emmanuel Sanders either against Darrell Revis or Brandon Browner is a wash. So I agree with you. So this could be a Welker and a Julius Thomas and maybe even Ronnie Hillman as a receiver as much as a running back. Listen, we saw Knowshon Moreno gash the Patriots last year up the middle during that game. But it was all said and done. The Broncos also self-destructed on offense and special teams.
Yep, they did.
A game. How can we forget that? So, you're right. This is how they attack them is going to be very, very key. And again, the one thing last year was Denver's lack of defense overall, but also Von Miller in and out of the lineup. I mean, he's got 9 sacks. He's on a little streak. DeMarcus Ware has quietly had a really good year. The two of them together, I mean, they have 23 sacks as a team in 7 games. And it's different this year. It's not like they're playing with these monster leads and then these guys are teeing off. They're just playing solid overall defense. They're number one in the league against the run right now. And, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, to me, is a wash. So I'm looking for it's something that where the advantage lies. And to me, this is a different game if Stephen Ridley's around.
Could be.
Denver.
Then you'd have the run threat, no question.
Exactly. So, but we also know, listen, the way New England plays at home, it can snowball in a hurry against any team.
Well,
and I mean any team. We saw it against Cincinnati. We saw it against Chicago.
Right.
I just think Denver's well-equipped to go in here and get this done. I still expect Tom Brady to have a pretty decent night, but I think he'll be under a little more duress than Tip Peyton Manning will be.
Two numbers for you to consider. 13 straight won by the Patriots at home, longest win streak currently in the NFL. 33 straight wins over AFC teams in the regular season.
Yeah, listen, if Denver pulls it off, they should celebrate a little, okay? Because going in there and winning a game is a tall order for anybody. And the AFC, I know the NFC teams had success up there a couple years ago with Arizona and San Francisco. But, listen, we talk about the Patriots dynasty. It's funny, the dynasty discussion came up last night with the San Francisco Giants.
Yep.
Are they a dynasty for winning,
three in 5 years? Yeah, and I'd have to say sure. Why not?
See, but I don't, because much like I used the argument with the Patriots after they won in 3 and 4 years but missed the playoffs in 2002, having the Giants won a World Series and then missed the playoffs and won a World Series and missed the playoffs.
They have, and that actually is a good point.
Yeah.
But I still think if you look at the bigger picture, 3 titles in 5 years, regardless, what you do in the off years still qualifies you as dynastic.
But I think they had losing seasons in those years too, right?
They did. They did.
One thing about the Patriots in 02, they were a 9-7 team, and they haven't had a losing season since what, 2000?
Correct.
That's why I say the Patriots dynasty is alive and well.
Yeah, and I understand it from that perspective too. Right. I think there's different ways you can categorize the dynasty of a team or whatever. I don't think a dynasty is just by one particular definition.
No, that's true. As we know, I mean, there's always to define it. And, who defined it better than John Forsythe and Linda Evans?
Once again, ba-dunch. Appreciate that. All right, Russell. Yeah, there we go. See, Bandmaster, he's still here. He's still here.
He's on radio delay of like 7 seconds.
Yeah, that's basically what it is, I think. There it goes. Now we're on time.
There you go.
Do you like that? All right, well, it's going to be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. And next week's the off week, but guess what? We won't take the week off. How's that?
Is it game show week?
Yes. Yes, it is game show week. And I think our producer, Kevin Collins, would like to speak with you about
that. Yeah,
I'll
be in touch, Russ.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we can have you be a part of, game show week.
I will be glad to. I've done it before. I've usually failed miserably, but anytime you can use the words Wink Martindale in a sentence, it's always exciting.
Oh, now fail is a relative term. Trust me on that one, especially when it comes to.
It's a good fail. By the way, Kevin, did that woman from Chicago ever get her prizes last year?
She did.
Okay.
We handed out another prize, too. Sorry, the vacuum's going in the background.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Kevin's going to take care of a little house cleaning. That's all right. When we take a commercial break, he'll be in here house cleaning too. So like that. All right. Russell, thanks again. Have a great weekend and, we'll talk to you for game show next week.
You got it.
Thanks, buddy. Russell Baxter, pro football guru, profootballguru.com, Bleacher Report, Bleacher Report Radio, Cold Hard Football Facts. Man, we love him. He has got a noggin full of knowledge, doesn't he? An absolute noggin full. All right. Make sure you remember that, of course, it's hashtag Prediction Thursday, which means, yeah, you got to send your scores in. So get it going right now. 855-PATS-500, web radio at patriots.com. To me, the one way that I absolutely know for certain that we will have your score on the record is by tweeting it, because we don't empty the email account over the weekend, and or we don't empty the Twitter account, and sometimes the email account does get emptied. So if you really want to make sure, especially if you're listening to this on a podcast, if you want to play Prediction Thursday, then you gotta tweet it. At JR Broadcaster. That's where you gotta send it to. So make sure you follow on Twitter. At JR Broadcaster. And tweet us your score prediction. Of course, you can also do it on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E on the last name. And then, of course, if we do finally get somebody to predict the correct score, final score, then you get a copy of the 2014 Media Guide Yearbook. That's coming up. You'll also have your chance to win that probably next week as well, during game show week as well. And I think probably give away another subscription to PFW, something along those lines. We'll come up with something good. I'm sure it'll be worth your time. Let's pause here for a timeout. Let's give you to get you a chance to get your scores in, to get your cards and letters in, to get your questions ready if you have them on the Broncos coming up with your prediction. And then we'll also turn to Mark Johnson from KOA Denver coming up in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved, with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I say 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
Do we have favorite Playbook moments from years past, Kevin?
Oh yeah, you can go listen to any show you want, pretty much.
Wow. Do we have the Sucky, Sucky, Sucky show?
Sure, we have that one.
Wow. That'd be good. That might be fun. Maybe
sucky,
not.
Sucky, Sucky, Sucky.
Do we have the show where I cursed at strippers?
The indisputable leader of the gang. He's the most tip-top, top cat.
Okay, that's enough. Thank you.
Stripper send you that?
He's an a- See, why go back and listen to all that garbage? We can get it in encapsulized form right here. All right, welcome back. Hour number two of Prediction Thursday. Hashtag Prediction Thursday on Inside the Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. All right, got to bring those predictions up. Here we go. Eldridge, thanks for hanging in there, buddy. You're up first.
Hey, John, how you doing, man?
Good, pal.
I got two concerns.
Okay, go.
Two concerns. Okay, I just heard Mr. Guru, and he says Sanders against Browner, or Revis the Wash, and JT.
Yeah.
I'm saying that too. Okay. But Revis probably have a better chance maybe of sticking with Sanders, but then, you know, I don't know how fast Revis really is, but But Brown, if you don't miss that jam or whatever, if you miss it, it's case hurrah for hurrah. He's gone.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, Eldridge. We don't really know for sure until we see them line up on Sunday who's going to be matched up with who. It does seem to me, physically speaking, it might be Revis's advantage if he's able to go with Sanders and then put the more physical Browner on the more physical Thomas. That's possible.
That's what I'm thinking. But what you know about Casillas besides that he's coming off a hamstring and a groin injury? I mean, we can't get nobody healthy.
Yeah.
Like the Ronald McDonald of the NFL.
Yeah. That's the way it works in this league, buddy.
The way it works. Okay, but that's my concern is how they're going to use him in Branch, because I know they're just getting him a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to be able to play contribute that much to the game Sunday unless they plan on putting him in a situational
right
or something.
Yeah.
Something I can think of. But I don't know. But my prediction is, got to go with my boys again. So I'm going to say 28-21.
You think the Patriots are going to hold Denver to 21 points? They average 32 per game.
Theoretically, no. but like I said, I'm going to be a homer. And if it's going to be kind of wet and rain, a little windy like they predicting, yes, because of Manning.
You okay.
Know, even though he's on a mission.
Okay.
If it's a fair day, man, we're in trouble.
Okay. All right. I'm following. All right. So Eldridge says 28-21. You're a good man, Eldridge. Thanks. Let's squeeze in Trey in Memphis here real quick. Trey, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, buddy.
Hey, man. You know, I'm listening to everybody all week, man. And, you know, everybody is, you know, looking at, Peyton Manning and the Broncos, like they're the Decepticons, man, of Transformers. So, I mean, but I'm looking at it like this right here, man.
I like that. That's good, Trey. Decepticons.
I'm looking at, the Decepticons. But I'm looking at Tom Brady, man. He's Optimus Prime, and the Autobots is the Patriots, man. And I think, man, we're going to reign supreme, man.
You have a couple of Transformers at home, Trey?
Supreme, man.
Trey, you got some Transformers in your collection at home?
Oh, man, I got plenty of them. Then I have two sons. I mean, so, you know, we kind of, you know, we.
Then you got them, yeah.
Transformer guys.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. See, in my day, it was Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? I kind of, you know, the Turtles, man, I was a Ninja Turtle guy. But, hey, man, you know, I'm a big Transformer fan.
Well, absolutely.
Okay, let's get back to football.
I like the movies. I like the Transformer movies were good. All right, go ahead. Back to football.
Okay, do you guys remember, I mean, you know, every time we have a number one defense rolling in into town, man, you notice how Brady have a tendency to make those guys look mediocre at times?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had this to come up with the Steelers on, you know, time in and time out and with the Ravens. And do you notice how sometimes Brady go out and put up big numbers, man?
Yeah.
Big numbers. I think this is going to be one of those Sundays. I mean, because the Broncos defense are getting a whole lot of credit, but they, you know, that with some of it is much deserved. But here's my prediction: I'm predicting the Patriots 34, Denver Broncos 24.
So we've got back-to-back pickers here that are keeping the Broncos under their average.
It's possible.
Okay, even with a banged up Patriots defense that's a little soft up the middle. How about that, Trey? Thank you. All right, so he says 34-24 for New England. What say you? Rob from Florida says, "Good afternoon. Not listening live, but this week's focus is simple. Love this show." Oh, he's talking about yesterday's show. All of us fans can only control one thing. That's crowd noise. The fans of the game, including myself flying up Friday, need to be so damn loud when the Pats are on defense. It's all about communication for Manning and his offense. When the Patriots have the ball, it should sound like church. So how can, I challenge every fan who has been or is complaining about this player can't run, this guy can't catch, this GM stinks, blah, blah, blah. Save it. That's how we can help. Okay. That's good. Hey, safe trip. Rob, up from Florida. Hope you enjoy the game on Sunday. Bring your mittens. Think you're going to need to bring your woolies. All right. Another guy who's got to bring his woolies, I think, is somebody who's probably a little more experienced, because I know he spent some time in the Northeast, even though he's been out in the Rocky Mountain Range for a number of years now. Mark Johnson, sports director at KOA Radio in Denver, friend from days gone by, and he joined us here inside the Playbook. Mark, great to visit with you. Thank you, sir.
You are very welcome, John. Always good to catch up with you.
Absolutely. All right. Tell us about this dynastic Denver Bronco team right now and how they're going to come in here and thrash New England.
Well, you want me to give you the narrative then for the Broncos fans right now?
That yes.
Just going to sweep its way right through a Super Bowl this year.
Absolutely.
So, well, I tell you what, it's an impressive looking team. And John, I'll say this. We all know, just like, you know, New England can talk about having one of the greats of all time in Tom Brady, the Broncos, of course, and Peyton Manning, who is destined for Canton, Ohio. The difference with this team this year, I will tell you, and I don't think it gets nearly the play because of all the records and all the hoopla surrounding number 18, it's what's going on the defensive side. What John Elway did during the offseason, bringing in guys like DeMarcus Ware, and I think T.J. Ward has made an enormous impact to safety on this team. To me, defensively is where this team has really become, I think, a special team. The offense has been good. Hasn't been as good as last year. But then again, you know, that was a record-setting year. But what's going on defensively, I think, is really the untold story about what's going on with the Denver Broncos right now.
Have to agree with you. Love the pickup of DeMarcus Ware. I actually thought he had some gas left in the tank while he was still in Dallas. And that was a great pickup, I thought, there. I've always liked Derek Wolfe. Saw him play in college and think he's got some talent. Terrence Knighton is vastly underrated. And, by the way, good commercial for Terrence Knighton on the air right now. So that's, you know, it's all good stuff right now. Things are going well if you got sponsors coming after you. Peyton Manning knows that as well as anybody, right?
Oh, yeah. No. He's the king of that. I always say, outside of Michael Jordan, he has done as good a job as any athlete in American history on crafting his image through the media. So, yeah, without question about that. And you know who we haven't even talked about, John, is what Aqib Talib has meant on you know, one quarter of that defense. So,
sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things happening with this team right now.
You know, Talib, has his play been such that you've seen where maybe the other guys back there have kind of elevated their game to match his? Because I think we've seen some really good things out of Chris Harris as well. You know, T.J. Ward. Yeah. T.J. Ward, fans here are scared of because of the lick he put on Gronk last year when playing for Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, Chris Harris is a very good cornerback. I know when guys around the league talk about the best corners in the league, many times his name doesn't come up, but I tell you what, he is a very, very good cornerback. And so having Aqib and his physical nature on the other side and style, I think has been enormous. But you know, I said a moment ago, and you point to it, that look he put on Gronk. I think T.J. Ward is a game changer with the physical nature with which he plays in the back end of that defense. And I think he has made a huge impact with this team. There's a little bit of a swagger to this team. Guys got healthy, of course. Von Miller is back. He's healthy, playing very well. So you got Ware and Miller coming off the, you know, opposite edges, so that opposing quarterbacks can't look one direction or the other because they're coming from both sides for those two guys there. And then up front with what those big fellas have done. So Jack Del Rio, the defensive coordinator, is loving life right now. He has got a full complement of weapons out there, guys he likes, the type of players he likes. And so, yeah, that defense has been special at this point.
Yeah, it really has been. And it's been really impressive to watch them sort of you know, grow a little bit this season. I have to think that, you know, both teams really probably have identified the other team's middle defensively as perhaps the best way to exploit them. Certainly from Denver's perspective, looking at New England's defense with the absence of a guy like Mayo in the middle, but really just because of the way, Gronk has come on and returned to his form has to send up a red warning flag, I think, for Denver defensively. So that means Ward is probably going to get an eyeful of 87, I would think.
Well, I have to think so. And by the way, is there going to be a finer tight end matchup than what we got in this game? Because Julius Thomas, you know, like Gronk has returned to the, you know, his level of play, and I think is as good as any tight end in the National Football League. And Julius Thomas is kind of that next wave coming, and as good as he is. So, yeah, these safeties and linebackers better be ready because I think both of these tight ends will have a lot of activity this weekend. So that's become a huge part of Denver's offense. Obviously, we know about Gronkowski with Tom Brady. But Julius Thomas is really developing. I know a lot of times, you know, Demaryius Thomas gets a lot of pub, and rightfully so, as good as he is. Wes Welker and what he's done over the course of his career, you know, affords him a lot of attention. But Julius is a guy that I think Peyton has got a great feel for, a great relationship with in terms of what they do on the field, and he trusts him, which is ultimately important for number 18. So Yeah, I think the tight ends are going to be enormous in this game.
I would totally agree. I think the tight end, maybe with a better game, might be the team that wins this game. I think it's that important.
Yeah, I can see that as well. You know, now with that being said, and you know, another guy we haven't mentioned from Denver's perspective, and it's really, I think, with the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, you know, we haven't talked about additions on the offensive side that John Elway did during the offseason.
Sure.
He has been enormous, and I think he is actually, I think, taking snaps away from Wes Welker. Wes is not nearly as important this year as he was a year ago because of what Emmanuel Sanders is becoming. And, you know, he's got four touchdowns for the last couple of ball games. Wes has made some big catches. But his, I think his stature in his offense, he's still a weapon, but it's not nearly as important as it once was. But Emmanuel Sanders, John, has been phenomenal in pickup for the Denver Broncos. And at this point in time, when you're trying to defend Denver, you know, you've got Emmanuel Sanders, you've got Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, Wes Welker. I mean, who are you really trying to key on? Because right now, Peyton Manning, as good as he is at distributing the football, it's pick your poison at that point in time. So even though that offense has not been over, it's, like I said, not as good as last year, it's been good. It's been kind of fun to watch. And you only expect with 18 back there pulling the trigger, it's going to get better as time goes on.
Why, Mark, do you think the offense hasn't been as good perhaps maybe as last year? Is it because of running back and no Moreno and because Hillman has had to fill in? Or have you identified something else?
Well, I don't know that I have a full answer for you. They've had some bad penalties at bad times. You know, Peyton's missed a few throws. Guys have made, you know, wrong reads offensively and not run the right that 18 thought that he was going to. I don't know that I can pinpoint it. I will say this. Ronnie Hillman has kind of emerged with Monte Ball going down. Obviously, no Sean Moreno goes on to Miami now. He has that season-ending injury. Monte Ball was thought to be the guy. He goes out with his medical issues. And Ronnie Hillman has finally emerged a little bit and is running very hard at this point in time. And it's kind of solidified that running game a little bit. So that's been better the last couple of weeks. I don't know that I can give you a definitive answer why it hasn't been as sharp at this point in time. But, you know, they've kind of had their skidding moments, if you will, so far this season offensively.
Has this team progressed? How the guys talked about progressing in terms of trying to meet their own expectations? Because it's pretty clear they wanted to reload after losing the Super Bowl last year to Seattle, and they have done so, especially on the defensive side. Have they met their own expectations?
Well, I think they have at this point. I mean, they've got that one come from behind overtime loss against Seattle, you know, up in the Emerald City. But outside of that, they've been pretty impressive. You know, this division, I think when you look, it was thought that maybe Denver waltzes through this thing. Now, San Diego's pretty darn good. Kansas City, I don't need to tell New England fans, Kansas City's a pretty good football team, the way they've been playing years of late. So I think they've met their expectations. Heck, they've only got the one loss. But I think some of the inconsistency has bothered them. And the other thing has been, John, they've been pretty healthy. They haven't dealt with a lot of injury at this point in time, and so, you know, from a Broncos perspective, knock on wood there, because you never know when that thing's going to jump up and bite you. But this team has been as good as they thought they could be at this point. I think that defense might even exceed some expectations as good as it's been.
All right, Mark, one more for you then. I just, you know, you look up and down the lineup. You've kind of alluded to it already. I mean, it's almost like pick your poison. What's been a surprise? Somebody perhaps that's come up and played to the point where that you feel like it has helped, you know, get this team to the current place where it is right now, and that may be the best in the NFL.
Well, I'll tell you a guy that has really surprised some people, and that has been Brandon Marshall, the middle linebacker. With Danny Trevathan going down with an injury, Marshall and stuff, there was concern about, oh, okay, what happens here? I mean, you know, Vaughn coming back was huge, picking up the guys we've talked about defensively. That was all huge. Emmanuel, I think, has been maybe better than they thought he would be from a numbers standpoint. But Brandon Marshall has really stepped in and solidified things in the middle at linebacker, and nobody expected that. Here was a guy they pick up. They had him on the practice squad. When Trevathan, who led the team in tackles a year ago, went down with the injury, there was some concern like, you know, this could be a real problem for this team. It has not been because of the way Brandon Marshall. So if you ask me for a guy that kind of came out of nowhere to surprise some people and solidified a job, I think that's probably where I'd point to at this point in time. But, you know, amongst all the stars on both sides of the football for Denver, he's been a guy that I think has made a huge difference with what he's done. Filling in for Danny Trevathan.
Again, in the middle, and I think that's where the Patriots will obviously look, and I know that's where Denver's got to look when it comes to trying to attack New England. So we have Manning v. Brady for the 16th time. Do you expect anything different from either one of these guys?
You know, you look at what they continue to do and what you know, Tom Brady did last week, And I chuckled at the beginning of the year when everyone was throwing dirt on the New England Patriots. I thought, come on, man. No, no, no. They still got that guy under center. And Bill Belichick is still drawing up the scheme. Don't bury that team. And here they come, playing well again. And you know how tough it's been for Denver to go into Foxborough and win in that venue. That has not been easy. This is going to be one of those great showdowns with two of the greatest who have ever been under center. I think this is a fun game on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it will be too, and I think it'll probably live up to all of the advanced billing. Mark Johnson again, sports director at KOA Radio in Denver. Mark, it's great to visit with you for a couple of moments, my friend. Be well.
All right, brother, take care.
You got it. All right, so there you go. A little more insight as well on the Denver Broncos from Mark, a part of the broadcast team there in Denver in covering the Broncos. He mentioned, of course, that the Broncos have struggled traditionally in New England. And you look at the breakdown overall, Denver is 9-11 against the Patriots in New England. 9 wins, 11 losses, but they lead the overall series with the Patriots. This will be the 45th meeting between the two teams, including, I believe that's including the playoffs here. Broncos, actually, regular season it does not. Including the postseason. This is 4-54. I can't add with a crap. That's 48. This will be the 49th meeting. Where the hell's the new math when you need it? 49th meeting between the two teams. And the Broncos lead the overall series 28 wins to 20. When you include the postseason. Regular season, it's Broncos 25, Patriots 19. But in New England, it's Broncos 9, Patriots 11. That's what I meant to get to. So they have had a little bit of a struggle here. The Patriots have won, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wow, really? 7, 8, 9? Whoa, no. I'm getting ahead of myself. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, they've won the last three in a row at home. You got to go back to 2006 to find the last Denver win here in Foxborough at Gillette. It was a 17-7 win for the Broncos back on September 24th of 2006. The Patriots have won the last three, and, of course, that would include last year's overtime win at 34-31 and then 31-21, excuse me. No, yeah, that's right, 34-21. And then, of course, the playoff loss was 26-16 at Denver last January. So, all right, getting ahead of myself there. But the Patriots have won the last three here against the Broncos overall. And a little bit of momentum in that regard on their side. But, pick your poison. As Mark said, as I think we all realize, this, to me, is going to boil down to what close games and what good teams all have to do in order to win games against other good teams. You have to execute. You cannot make mistakes. You certainly cannot self-inflict wounds, which means, penalties and turnovers against yourself. And if you manage to do that, then you're going to be right there with a chance to win the game. That is the parity in the NFL. What worries me the most about this game, kids, what worries me the absolute most about this game is not all of the offensive weapons that Denver has. Not so much Peyton Manning, because he's as savvy as they come and maybe as savvy as we will ever see in a long, long time still to come in the NFL at quarterback. But what worries me the most is the Patriots' penchant for shooting itself in the foot with penalties. This has been one of my big nitpicks, getting back to Nitpick Tuesdays here, one of my big nitpicks all season long with this team through the first 8 weeks of the season is the fact that this team has not yet cleaned up the little things. We're getting false starts. We're getting holds. We're getting, illegal procedures. We're getting some interference calls. We're getting defensive holding. We're getting offensive holding. We're getting all of these things that, frankly, to the tune of 7, 8, 9 penalties a game, that against a team like Denver, you cannot let them stay on the field through your mistakes. If there was ever a time for the Patriots defense to emphasize getting Denver off the field on third down, this has got to be that game. Because, you give Peyton Manning an extra chance or two or six or seven, he's going to kill you. You know it. I know it. We all know it. And the guys down the hallway in that locker room know it. You cannot give them extra chances. When you get the Broncos in third down, and especially in third down in long situations, you absolutely must convert and get them to kick the ball or come up with a stop, get a turnover, something. Patriots will need, I think, to win this game, they will need to hold Denver under 50% on third down. They're just going to have to. And they're going to have to force a turnover or two. And hopefully it'll come in a short field where they can convert that turnover into points. But if Denver goes 50% or better on third down and the Patriots cannot force the Broncos to turn it over, Denver will win this football game on Sunday. I think Denver is, and you look at the two teams offensively, they're almost beginning to balance each other out. Denver has right now a decided edge, and even the most diehard Patriots fan has to admit, Denver's got an edge right now personnel defensively. The only thing that seems to mitigate this and even things out is the fact that New England is playing here at home. Home field advantage is definitely worth 3 to 6 points. Even in the pros, it's still worth it because there's travel and there's all that stuff involved. It may have a little bit more, I think, of an effect on the college game, but I think it's worth at least a field goal in the pros, and I think most odds makers look at it like that as well. That might be enough. That might be enough to sway it. I mean, it's possible. Give it some thought, though. Denver's a 3.5-point favorite, road favorite, going into this game. So if you get 3 points, then it's a toss-up game. But if you're playing in Denver, well, then Denver's a touchdown favorite. And that's sort of a loose comparison. Patriots must get extra possessions. Patriots must get Denver off of the field. Patriots must seize the lead and force Denver to play from behind, because that will make Denver more one-dimensional on offense, and you'll know where it's coming. It's not like you're not going to know where it's coming from anyway. But you really are, you're going to be able to dictate how Denver wants to play if you can get the jump on them. To me, even more reason to take the football. So the coin flip, if you win the coin flip, you should take the ball and try to score. They've had great success with that the last two games. We talked about that earlier this week. I think that's a huge key for Sunday. I'd love to see them take the ball. I don't think they will, but I'd love to see them do it and get the lead and then force the Broncos to play from behind from the get-go. God, that'd be huge. All right, your predictions. Let's fill out the rest of the show with your predictions, your thoughts. Where is this game going to boil down? Who's going to be the key player? Who's going to make it or break it for his side on either side? Whether you're a Pats fan or a Broncos fan, doesn't matter. Who's going to decide this? Hashtag Prediction Thursday. Send it up. Webradio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook, or you can hit the phones, 855-PATS-500, like Justin in Virginia. Hey, Justin.
Hey, what's going on, John?
It's going, baby.
My prediction is 45-38, Patriots.
45-38. So you see the offensive shootout.
You're, but part of the reason I think Peyton Manning's going to lose this is, one, the weather, and two, Ware and Von Miller are going to get to Tom Brady. But when they don't, I don't think this defense of the Broncos, I think it's a little bit of a mismatch for the Patriots. And I'm going to tell you why. The linebacking core of the Broncos and their safety core is a little bit suspect in terms of coverage. Ward can light a guy up, but I don't know how he is in terms of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Marshall, he just gets a lot of PIs, a lot of PIs, and a lot of them didn't get calls against the Chargers. And I think they're a little overblown because they're great on paper, but they do make mistakes. Don't get it twisted. Peyton Manning overthrows guys a few times, and not saying we don't, but they can make mistakes too. And the weather is a huge thing. I definitely think it's going to be cold. And that is not Peyton Manning's forte.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Peyton's 8-11, you know, in games where the temperature is 40 degrees or colder at kickoff, and Brady is 42-6. But, you know, I don't know how much, you know, stock he can really put in that, because we all know that, you know, Manning played for years in a dome in Indy.
And the thing is, people talk about how the Broncos are blowing people out and stuff like that, and they are, but when I think about it, the Chargers were pretty competitive with them, and the Broncos made mistakes in that game. They had three would-be turnovers, I counted.
Yep.
It was a kick. There was a kick return fumble or some. Peyton Manning threw the ball, and it was intercepted by Eric Weddle, I think, and it got pulled back or something like that. And there was an Emmanuel Sanders fumble that it just bounced the wrong way or something, and Wes Welker picked it up. They've made mistakes. They haven't been perfect. We haven't been perfect, but I think we can beat them. It's at home. We're 40-3 at Gillette, and I think we're all right.
13 straight home wins, too. Longest streak in the NFL going in.
Yep.
Need a little bit of that home field Gillette mojo.
You're
All right. So Justin says, thanks, Justin. 45-38 Patriots is what Justin says. How about Peter in Texas? Peter, you're up next in the playbook.
John, good afternoon from Texas, the fellow Longhorn here.
Nice. Nice. Where are you calling from, Peter? Where in Texas?
Well, actually, as we speak, I'm driving from San Antonio to Brownsville, so I'm just north of the Five Points area in Corpus.
Nice.
I actually live in Brownsville, went to UT class of 82 and UT Law School class of 85.
Well, you're almost as old as I am. God bless you.
Listen, before I get you to my prediction, my buddies and I were having lunch on Tuesday, and of course with the with Colt McCoy beating the Cowboys on Monday night and with Romo's back uncertain, we were hoping that Jerry Jones would call Daniel Snyder and ask what would it take to trade for Colt McCoy.
You know, I can't believe you said that, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like going, how good would Colt look in a Cowboys uniform right now, especially with Romo being hurt? I'd take Colt over Brandon Whedon, and you know he'd have something to prove since Whedon's the guy that basically nudged him out in Cleveland to begin with.
That is correct. But, of course, that ended at about 3 o'clock our time on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, it did. That's right.
Listen, I wanted to tell you, I kind of have a weird way of knowing who's going to win. And I usually listen to the playbook on my morning run. I get up pretty early and listen to you guys on the podcast.
Nice. Thank you.
My iPod. Yeah, and interestingly, I think it was last Friday, I heard the Thursday show, and that fellow that called in that predicted like a 51-14 score, do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And I don't know, there was something about that prediction. He sounded pretty certain about it. And, of course, he was pretty close. I think he said he was, what, 1 point off or something?
Well, he was actually technically 9 points off, but he nailed the 51 for the Patriots. So, and he actually emailed, I think it was Tuesday of this week, and he said, hey, at least I got half of it right. And I said, yeah, that's true, but, you know, close only counts in horseshoes, hand grenades, and nuclear weapons.
Here's bottom line, we're going to win, but I think it's going to be a little different kind of game. I think the Patriots are going to be fairly in control for most of the game. But Peyton Manning will lead a drive at the end of the game to tie it up. Game goes into overtime. And we win on a field goal. And, of course, I'm not sure if we win the toss or not. But we win on a field goal in overtime. Final score, 34-31.
34-31. Okay.
Yeah, the reason in overtime, and the reason that I'm confident about it is that when I get really tense during the week, when I start feeling kind of anxious and like, when is the game going to start, that's when we lose. last time I felt that way was Monday night, the Monday night game in Kansas City. And I don't feel this way at all this week. I'm actually quite relaxed. And so, you know, that's the way it's happened for me. And as far as, you know, both quarterbacks are going to play well. It's going to be another matchup worthy of the legacy. But we'll win it on a Gostkowski field goal in overtime. Mark, book it.
All right, 34-31. Overtime, not dissimilar, certainly similar to perhaps what happened last year, maybe a little bit different route, but when you say that, you know, you're calm and cool and collected, I'm getting a picture of Kevin Bacon in Animal House, all is well, right?
Something like that. I can't explain it, but or something like that happening. And who was it that said, was it Gresh that said that he feels that this is the Danny Amendola game, and it just might be?
You know, that's actually, I think he did say that, and that actually is not a bad analogy, because I think there's going to be an opportunity there for someone to step up, because Denver's going to be very worried, clearly, as we kind of discussed already today. They're going to be clearly worried about Gronk up the seam. They're going to be worried about LaFell, who's proven his toughness and his ability to out-grab the ball, if you will, on the corners as well. And depending upon what they decide to do, if they decide to get to Edelman, and I think that certainly Denver will be in tune to him, this may be Amendola's chance to step up and shine a little bit here, whether it's through the passing game or through the kicking game. This is an opportunity, and I could certainly see him being effective enough at some point, whether it's through giving the team better field position or making a play on offense, to where his presence could certainly make a difference.
Yeah, but thank you, John, and thank you for hosting the show. I listen to it just about every morning from podcast. And speaking of Amendola and Welker, of course, Tech plays Tech tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be watching probably through my hands and my fingers, trying to spread them out every so often, because it's been that kind of a year for the Longhorns, unfortunately.
Well, I hear there's plenty of tickets available.
You don't get that very often, do you? Peter, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Hope I can talk to you again.
You got it.
All right, thanks. Peter's in Texas, and that's good stuff right there. We get a couple of Facebook comments in here. Blarco from Los Angeles predicts Patriots 38, Broncos 28. Both are very good teams, and it would seem more logical to pick a closer game, but I just have a feeling we're going to win it comfortably. Broncos might scare us in the beginning, but we'll always be one step ahead. Chris says Patriots 37, Broncos 35. Manning gets 5 touchdowns. Brady only gets 4, but 3 field goals make the difference, including a game winner to close out the game. Christopher, I actually kind of like that pick right there. That's a good one. Paul says for hashtag prediction Thursday, I think it'll be a high-scoring game. Pats get a score just before halftime to manage to just about keep their noses in front. Late red zone pick ends the Broncos' last drive. Patriots come away 38-34. Pretty good one there too, Paul. Onique in Derby, Connecticut. John, this weekend's matchup with Brady and Manning will be great, like always. Looking for Revis to shadow Thomas and Browner to handle Julius Thomas. Score will be tight, like always. Maybe another overtime situation like last year. As with the cold, my prediction is Pats 37, Broncos 34. All right. I see where we're going here with the score range, and a lot of folks still seem to think it'll be high scoring, and I can't disagree on that. That's for sure. Let's see. Who else hasn't gone here? Nori on hashtag prediction Thursday. Pats 37, Denver 33. I expect the Pats offense to do what they have to do to win. Let's see. They'll bounce back from the past two games, have a coming out party, 100 plus yards receiving. Julian Edelman with a touchdown. Gronk will continue to have to play like a beast. Denver receivers will have okay games. Thomas will be the guy for them to have a good game in the passing game, but only him. And he says this will be the game of the year, no question about it. I think it'll be hard to kind of pass that one up, no question. Ramon says, John, for prediction Thursday, I have the following. Logic advises me to go for Denver on this one. We, the Patriots, do not have the pass rush needed to hurry Manning. Manning is a very accurate quarterback. However, weather could play a role in Foxborough's altitude also. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say Foxborough's altitude will be a factor. But I think I understand where you're going, Ramon. He says, my score with more passion than conviction is 34 for the Pats, 31 for Denver. Okay, that's good. I'm liking that. Marcus also says Pats 34, Denver 31. Mary Beth says Pats 23, Broncos 21, and no stupid mistakes. That's the key, Mary Beth, without a doubt. As I just said a little while ago, Patriots have to limit mistakes. They have to take care of the ball. They cannot make turnover. I mean, they can't shoot themselves in the foot. You know, the illegal procedures, the holdings, that's just, 7, 8, 9 penalties is not going to get it done against Denver. I cannot stress that enough. if this goes to 7, 8, 9 penalties, Denver's going to win this game. I said it before. I'll say it again, repeating it right now. They also got to turn Denver over at least once or twice to give them good field position and perhaps take advantage of it on a short field. That's how a team with, I think, personnel-wise, a better defense, that's how you beat them. That plus playing on the home field, I think there's a little mojo that's probably going there, for lack of a better phrase. That's how it works. Cody sends this on Facebook, and he says, John, I'm thinking 38-28 for the Pats. And that's Cody in Nova Scotia. Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Thank you, Cody, for checking in on that one. All right, back to the phones. Bill is in Steventown, New York. Bill, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Great, Bill. Thanks for the call.
Thought about this a lot. Here's the way I'm going to lead. Belichick and Brady always seem to frustrate Peyton. So I'm going to give those guys the credit that I always think they deserve. I'm going to go Pats 38, Denver 31.
Okay.
And I think what's going to make a big difference here is going to be the pressure. And once Manning gets frustrated, I say we're going to get at least 2 touchdowns off of interceptions.
2 touchdowns off of picks.
Yeah. I think it's Peyton's Achilles heel, that once he gets a frustration in him, he tends to pump him out quicker and doesn't take the time to watch him. And, you know, it's cost him a couple Super Bowls. So I think that's the way I'm going to lean for this game.
Well, if that happens, then I can understand, A, why there would be a 38-31 score, and B, I would tell you that if that happens, there's no way the Patriots are going to lose the game. If they got not only 1 but 2, they're going to win the game. So I would happen to agree with your score prediction if they're able to come through with that. You know, Bill Belichick has a history of actually defending a guy like Peyton Manning pretty well. That's one thing you do have to consider. Now, the other end of this is that Peyton, as I suggested earlier, is as savvy as they come. He's seen just about everything that anybody in the NFL can throw at him. He's seen it. This is the challenge for the Patriots and the coaching staff this week.
Right.
And I do expect more of them to drop back into coverage as opposed to putting on a blitzkrieg, you know, against Manning, because Manning could just pick that apart. I think he'd have a field day with that. So I've kind of changed my way of thinking on that after watching Washington, you know, do the very same thing to Dallas on Monday Night Football this week. I'm thinking, God, that'd be great if we could see the Patriots do that. But then upon further thinking, I'm like, there's no way that's going to happen because Manning's just too doggone good. So I think you want to try to give him different looks. And if you can give him different looks and cause him to hesitate an extra half a second to a second, that might be all you need to get a coverage sack or to get a mistake made.
Yeah, just seeing, you see Revis jumps in there and grabs the ball every so often. And I'm excited. I can't wait for Sunday. This is predominantly going to be, where does the Super Bowl go through?
No question. No question. I don't want to make it seem like if the Patriots lose on Sunday, the season's over, because that's not the case.
Oh, not by any means.
But
because by the same, I think when Tom Brady said the other day, I was watching one of his interviews,
mm-hmm.
and he put it out pretty straight. He says, you know, I've been here a long time. There's nothing I really haven't seen, and that applies to both quarterbacks.
True.
So then I have to go, for myself, I kind of look at it and I say, all right, well, what are going to be the weaknesses?
Right.
And the one thing that, yes, I'm a Pats fan, but the one thing I've always said about Peyton, the reason why his brother's got 2 and he has 1, he seems to choke on frustration a little more than what I've seen out of Brady.
So right.
I'm going to take that and I'm going to lean with the Pats and, like you said, if we get one, it's going to be huge for us to win the game. But if we can take 2 turnovers and put them towards point, even if they're not touchdowns, even if they're field goals,
right,
it's going to be huge for us to take the game.
Agreed. You've got to make breaks in a situation like this. There's no doubt about it. Bill, thank you for the call. Bill says 38-31 Pats. Andy in Vermont up next in the playbook. Hey, Andy.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me up.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that Patriots didn't do well last week was when those 2-point conversions came up, the Bears they did not hold them. Bears pulled it on them like twice. It might come down, get down to field goals and those 2-point conversions or something else. There's so many offensive threats on each team, and I don't want to, you know, offend any listeners, but it's probably going to come down to the defensive backs and who's molesting who without getting called for it.
Right. Yeah. That's you're probably right. I mean, can you get away with something in a game like this? I'm not so sure you can on either side. So I think that could benefit the Patriots as well as it could end up benefiting the Broncos.
That's right. I said last week that I thought Patriots would win by 3, and it was still in that, you know, 70-point between the team range and just the Patriots. Revis was all over Marshall, and of course, Browner was all over Jeffries. And I think Browner does better when it's in the back half of the Patriots' field of play when they're trying to protect their own end zone. I think Browner is a good matchup for these taller guys. I don't think he has a speed like some of the other cornerbacks that I would probably play more upfield with the other team against their own end zone. So he can catch plays. He plays safe. I mean, he's playing as a linebacker because he's all over the place in the zone. I think this guy Ayers showed that he had a little bit of charisma behind him. He did pretty good for just getting on the team. I hope they sign Skinner back, because I still think Davis and Fleming and Skinner are great players that will move back up to the active 53 as far as linebackers. I see the Patriots probably having, you know, a one more threat on offense more than the Broncos, but either team, it's going to be awesome. Now, if the Patriots had throwback jerseys like Pittsburgh had,
Pittsburgh's throwbacks were hideous. I'm sorry. I didn't like them. I don't like the whole bumblebee thing. Denver's had some pretty hideous throwbacks in the past, too. They've had, like, vertical striped socks that were just, like, I don't know where they came from. Made them look like barber poles.
Well, I know, and that's how they scored so many touchdowns. They were targets. You couldn't miss them.
Now, listen, the Patriots' throwbacks are about as good as they come. And I'm not sure why. I forgot to ask Fred today why we haven't seen the throwbacks this year and whether or not it's going to happen at some point in time this year or not. But I hope that it does happen again soon. All right, what's your score, Andy?
I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be in the 30s again. Last year, Broncos really hammered Patriots late at night. Half the people in the stadium were starting to leave. Patriots pulled it back out. But, you know, they've had a great number of games this year where they really put it to the other team starting out. If they can, like I said before, if they get the 5 or 6 man offensive line, set the tone, if they get the 5 man defensive line to set the tone and just put pressure. But I think it's going to come down to secondary. I think it's going to be a close one again. I'm going to say 40-38 Patriots.
Ooh, now that'd be a shootout, 40-38. Yeah, that would be entertaining without a doubt. That's good stuff, Andy. Thank you. On Twitter, Mike says, this is Max in San Diego. He says, feeling good about this game. Pats 38, Donkeys 31. Hashtag I want Manning's head. There we go. This one comes from Nobo, and he says, on hashtag prediction Thursday, 45-38 for the Patriots. Prashant says, this guy from Denver is babbling. I didn't think he was babbling at all. That Mark Johnson is pretty good. Let's see. What else do we have? Daryl says, Boston tight end party key for Patriots Sunday at home. Gronkowski and Tim Wright. One grab, 5 touchdowns, 250 yards. Pats roll big, 44-31. Woo! All right, so Daryl says 44-31 for the Patriots. That's supreme confidence. Chanel likes the Patriots 30-27. Now, Chanel, you took my score. So if I win, I guess you win, huh? Because that's what I predicted to the PFW guys. I'm going to stick with it for now. I'll say 30-27 like you. Jose says, Broncos might be the better team, but New England is at home and they're finding themselves every week. He says 35-34, Patriots by one. Man, now why would I, you know, if it actually turns out 35-34, you know that that's going to be a heart stopper to the very end. Will you be on the edge of your seat? That's a white knuckle game. That's good stuff. Mark says, John, super pumped for Sunday's game. Going to be a great one, but can't pick against the Pats, so I'm going to have the Pats 34, Broncos 33. Woo-hoo. See, nobody has the guts to pick the Broncos here. You just can't bring yourself to do it because it's the Broncos and it's Peyton Manning. I get that. This is where your heart is thinking over your head. And if you're a Broncos fan, I know you're shaking your head up and down in agreement. I understand that. I get that. Look, Denver's very good, and there's a reason why Denver's a 3.5-point favorite on the road at Gillette, where the Patriots have won 13 straight games. Because they're good. That's why. Glenn says 30-28 Patriots. Late field goal drive for the win. Sean says, my prediction for Sunday, Patriots 31, 28 for the Broncos. Special teams will be the difference. And then Prashant comes back with his prediction on Twitter, and he says, Patriots won a hard-fought game 27-24, claim number one spot in the AFC for the first time. Well, at least this year anyway. Hugh says, love this, Patriots 47, Broncos 44. Hashtag prediction Thursday, 47-44. I hadn't seen this guy as a follower. That's funny. Kevin, you see this guy? Oh, you don't have my Twitter account up. His name is Hugh. Last name is Jass, J-A-S-S. That's the character. That's the character in the Simpsons.
Sir Mix-a-Lot?
Yeah, yeah.
I like big butts and I cannot lie?
Yeah, yeah. That's the guy too, right? Love it. Absolutely love it. Okay. And then let's see. Yeah, he said 47-44. And I think... was looking to see if we had any other predictions, but nothing up yet. So you have plenty of time to get your prediction up on Twitter, especially if you're getting this on the podcast. That's where we want you to send it, at JR Broadcaster. So make sure you send it along. Now to the emails, and there's a ton of them here. Catul from St. Louis. I hope I pronounced it right. Pats 41, Broncos 27. Great show. Keep up the good work. Thank you, sir. Kyle says, I'm predicting 34-31 Patriots win. Also wanted to thank you guys for the pre- and post-game shows and the curse words on the website. Makes the games easier to get through, especially when it's close. I would agree with that. I actually like following Fred on his curse words column, especially if you're watching from outside the area. It's pretty good. Should try that sometime here on Patriots.com. Glenn says, John, how are you? I'm good, Glenn. Thank you, sir. From Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. He says, my pick for the week, 28-24, Denver wins, unfortunately. All right, well, there's the first Pats fan that's gone to the dark side. And Glenn in Ottawa says 28-24, Denver. Steve in Killeen. I see a Pats special team play as a key X, or that will show up in this game. Pats 34, Broncos 27. And keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to the epic game this will be. Yes, sir. Drew in Bowie, Maryland. Julian Edelman has a big day on special teams, catches the winning touchdown. 31-30 comeback win. And on the winning throw, Brady surpasses Elway for career yardage thanks to his big game last week. That actually could happen, Drew. That's fairly prescient of you. Jeff in California, as for my prediction, I think our Pats pull it out 31-27. 31-27. Okay. Chad in the ATL. Going to be close, John. If the Pats get the ball first and score, then I say it'll come down to minutes left with the ball in Manning's hands, down by three, and he throws a dart to Demaryius Thomas that gets tipped by Revis, intercepted by McCourty. Game over. Pats win it 30-27. Ooh, that's a good prediction. All right. Thank you, Chad. That's good. And he's got to share the 30-27 score with myself and Chanel. Gabe says... from Pennsylvania, says Pats 41, Broncos 26. John, let's hope that our boys continue to peak. I think this team is tested and ready. I think we keep Denver out of the end zone a few times, and that's what I'm going with. Ray says, John, I think Denver's due for a loss. They've been rolling for a few weeks now, with many analysts and TV personalities ranking them number one in the league. Their confidence has to be very high. I think their overconfidence will be their undoing. My only concern is the Pats' secondary. I think McCourty, Revis, and Browner will get it done, so I believe Peyton will attack whatever his receiver is matched up against Logan Ryan or Daron Harmon. In the end, Pats squeak out a close one, 31-28, says Ray in New York. Mike from Rancho Cucamonga, California. With the signing of Allen Branch and Silver Salinga coming back, isn't that a lot different? A lot of different D tackles for only two positions on defense? Well, they need the depth there. They like to rotate their tackles, especially, you know, every 2 to 3 possessions. So, no, I don't think so at all. Also, last game, how has Logan Ryan and Kyle Arrington looked in coverage? Well, they both tend to play the nickel position. I don't think either one of them has looked great. I think they're adequate. You know, Ryan has shown up some physicality where I think, you know, he might could end up, you know, being, you know, one of those guys who could end up making a switch to safety if need be, kind of like McCourty did. But I think they really fancy his play at corner and continuing to develop him. So I give Ryan a little bit of the heads up long term over Arrington in that regard. Luke says, John, Pats win at 33-21. Brady looks like the Brady of 2010. I expect a run game to solidify and improve. Okay, what else do we have here? Tons of them. Keep pouring in here. I'll get in as many as I can. Mary said, or this is Noel in Denver using Mary's email. Noel says, my pick is Pats 38, Broncos 28, and happy Halloween. Thank you, Noel. Nobody said that yet today. You know, we were going to get into the whole what's your favorite Halloween candy today, but frankly, we just hadn't had time, so... I like candy corn. I'm sorry. I'm just old school, old fashioned, just the way it is. Jeff says, John, just wanted to weigh in on the Denver pass rush, which to me is a bit overhyped. Ware is good, but I don't think he's as big an upgrade over last year when Denver had Sean Phillips, who had double-digit sacks. Ware is a better player, but I just don't see it as big of a difference as people are making it out to be. And he does point out the Trevethan loss this year. Tim says in Pennsylvania, Pats 37, Broncos 34, saying no more injuries during the game. And then Ward and Gronk reunite. Austin in Toronto says, John, very tough spot for Denver here with a little help from the weather. And he goes New England 41, Denver 27. Kareem, what's going on, John? Kareem from Connecticut. My pick is 30-24, Patriots. Just the way I truly feel. However, I know the team we are going up against is very good. Chad says, Rook, I predict a close win, 32-26 for the Patriots. Down to the wire, most of the points scored in the second half. Expect a clean, physical defense, but I still have our offensive line committing 2 or 3 penalties. They better not commit any more than that. Listen, if you could tell me right now that you could hold the Patriot offensive line to just 2 or 3 penalties for the game and nobody else commits a real gaffe, I'll take it. I'll take it. Rob from Ormond Beach, Florida. Without a doubt, this is my favorite weekend of the regular season. We might not really know how lucky we are to watch two Mount Rushmore quarterbacks play each other so many times. And he says, Pats 36, Broncos 24. Let's see, what else do we have? Noel says, Mark Johnson, KOA, did he have an orgasm? Manning drooling everywhere. Maybe Peyton should do a commercial in Boston. Nah, Boston has the best pizza and Italian food. Oh, that's funny. Brent says, John, I'm a diehard, longtime Patriots fan living in Roseville, California, surrounded by Niners and Raiders fans. I'd like to hear your projection on the impact of the crowd noise at the Razor. Crowd obviously made an impact when Cincy came to town. And then he says, do you think we can shake up Denver this weekend like we did Cincinnati in week 5? We're not going to catch Cincinnati off. We're not going to catch Denver off guard, I think, like the Patriots kind of caught Cincinnati off guard. I will say this, that if the fans here at Gillette can bring the same type of energy that we saw in week 5 against Cincinnati, then there's no question in my mind that the Patriots will be right there at the very end. This is where the fans can be a factor. No question. Gustavo says, I think the better team with less mistakes will win it. And I completely, completely agree, Gustavo. And he says, Pats 38, Denver 35. Let's see, what else do we have here? Gope says, I did not expect the Pats to score 51, but I did have them winning 42-20. Let's see, what else? He says, that being said, I like the Pats big 45-17. I know the numbers don't favor them, but I just have a gut feeling. Bold prediction, Brady will hit 7 touchdowns in this game. Whew! Pat in Agawam, Mass. Pat's 37-21, causing 2 turnovers. It snows. Edelman and Wright have big games. He says, we all know Peyton's not great in inclement weather. KB goes for Patriots, 38. Denver, 36. Both offenses clicking on all cylinders. And Michael says, 45-44, Patriots shootout of the unstoppable. Whew. Goodness. Drew and Bowie, he said, we have this already? Yeah, he said 31-30. I think he just sent it again to make sure I got it in. That's Mike in Bath, Maine, that came up with a 45-44 prediction as well. All right. Nick in Boston, very quickly, you're in the playbook. Hey, Nick.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, sir.
Really appreciate, your show. I'm a first-time caller to this show, but I think you run a great tight ship, and your guests always have great contributions, so... appreciate the insight you've given leading up to this epic matchup this weekend.
Thanks, Nick. Sure appreciate that. Glad you called.
So I think it's going to be 27-27 late. The Patriots are going to go up by a field goal, 30-27 in the fourth.
Yep.
And then, Peyton's going to attempt to come back to win. But just like they ended the game on a pick six against the Jets, it's going to end on a pick six for the Pats. It's going to be
37-27. Pick six to end it. Ooh, listen, if it works out that way, I'll take it all the way to the bank. Absolutely.
I mean, I think the secondaries have their strengths. They both do, but I think ours is going to be better. They're going to get Manning trying to do something to really move him downfield and come up big with that pick. So I think it's going to happen.
All right.
That's my gut feeling.
Good. Listen, gut sometimes is all you need in this particular instance. Nick, thanks for the phone call. Wraps up our edition of Patriots playbook here on hashtag prediction Thursday. I said 30-27. Even though I kind of leaning more, a little bit more to more scoring, but I'll hold on to that one for the time being. Don't forget, kids, next week we will be here, even though it's the bye week. We'll have Nitpick Tuesday, as we always have on Tuesday, but then we're still unsure Wednesday or Thursday for game show. And we're going to give away some great prizes, so you don't want to miss out next week. This is where we have some fun, and we'll still talk about Week 10 in the NFL and all that kind of stuff. And we'll have whatever's happening with the Patriots will definitely be on that, even though there's not necessarily a game to get ready for. But it's one of the most it's one of the weeks that I look forward to the most every season, because we pin the ears back and have a good time with it. So you want to make sure that you're tuned in. Thanks to Mark Johnson from KOA in Denver, Russell Baxter, the guru, Kevin Collins, who puts it all together. Fantasy football champs coming up next right here on Patriots.com radio. Should be fun this weekend, kids. See you Tuesday.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.